I'm not prepared to discuss whether I'm a member of the NDP.
Okay. We'll keep with the calls. Harry, you've got the last word here. Go ahead, please. I've got lots waiting.
No words in at all. This is supposed to be an open line, you know?
Go ahead, Harry.
I agree with John, and I just asked that question, how did he respond to being a commie, you know, because that thing was made. But I don't think this should have been made. Has nothing to do with the issues. I think John stands for justice in regard to the unemployed workers. And there are many, many unemployed, and companies keep working overtime. Many, many companies keep working overtime, and people work as many as 7 days a week, and they work maybe close to 60, 70 hours a week, sometimes even more. And this is very unjust, very unjust.
Harry, let me thank you so much for your call this morning. I'm glad you took part.
The Wayne McLean Hotline. Provocative. Informative.
Here with John Clark.
Okay, I have a quick question and, well, actually two quick questions.
Okay, let's go with the first.
Okay, first of all, how does he say that he has credibility for a man who quits his job to become leader of an unemployment workers union? I don't understand that. It seems ironic almost.
Okay. He's listening to you. You can refer to him as John and speak right to him if you like.
Okay, John, how would you come back to that?
Well, I think that that an organization of unemployed workers, a union of unemployed workers, requires leadership and requires full-time organizers, the same as any other organization. While I certainly didn't make a killing out of working for the Union of Unemployed Workers, I did get a living wage, and I think that was entirely justified, and I don't apologize for it.
No, that's not what I mean at all. I mean, you demand jobs, 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 but yet
I think Mulrooney says that. That's it. But you'd agree with him on that, wouldn't you?
Yes, to the extent that he gives us them.
I heard you speak at Harris Park for your trekkers picnic, and that was... Your big slogan was jobs, jobs, jobs.
Tom, let me ask you this if I could. I've never had the pleasure of hearing John speak publicly.
Mm-hmm.
Was he good?
Is he good?
Is he a good talker?
He knows how to motivate a crowd, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. So he makes sense politically and philosophically when you hear him?
I suppose he does to himself. Maybe not to the majority of the other people in the city.
Okay. What's your other question?
Okay, my other question is that there's another center in the city, Unemployment Help Center.
I've got Jackie Ewan from that organization on the live line here in a couple of minutes because we're going to just take a moment or two to tell everybody about what her program involves as far as trying to get reduced bus fares for the unemployed.
Mm-hmm.
So she'll be coming up. So what's your point about that organization?
My point is like... Aren't they both basically the same? But when I think the union is more politically active. So why does London need two to begin with?
Okay, that's a fair enough question. I'd like you to answer that, John. Let me bring Jackie in on that. Jackie, did you hear what our caller just asked?
Yes, I have to clarify that our mandate is a little bit different than the union's, which I'm not quite clear on what theirs is. I haven't phoned to make any comment on John or what has happened to him.
I know, but this question just surfaced out of the blue. John, can you come in on this and respond to what Tom says? I mean, do we have two different organizations here with different aims and purposes?
Yeah, I think the fairest way to put things is that I think Jackie would probably agree, that the Help Center is an organization that seeks to provide services of one kind or another to unemployed people. I'm not knocking that. The Union of Unemployed Workers is an organization that seeks to organize the unemployed to press for changes and to defend themselves. I'd be quite happy to leave it at that.
Okay, and Jackie, that's
true. We don't organize the unemployed. We represent them to the extent that because they're all political persuasions, all religions, all incomes, blue collar, white collar, etc. We try to represent the community because essentially it is the community that is unemployed and it is the community that pays the price for it.
Jackie, I'll tell you what, I'm going to put you back on hold because we do want to chat with you about your proposals regarding the LTC. So will you hold on for a few seconds? And we'll be back with you very shortly. Let me get back to Tom here. You have the last word, Tom.
No, I'm that I'm basically satisfied with what John said.
Thank you so much for your call today.
News that makes talk.
Mr. Clark says and does. I would just like to ask one question.
Sure, go ahead.
How come we can bail out banks and bail out Chrysler and we can't put money in to make them work for the unemployed? Surely if they built roads and homes, and they could build lots of things.
Mm-hmm.
And that would make work. And maybe then we wouldn't have so many of our youth in trouble and in jails on that.
All right, so you're opposed to what the government did with Canadian Commercial?
Definitely.
And what the government in the U.S., and I think to some extent here, did with the Chrysler Corporation?
Yes.
Wouldn't there have been a lot more unemployment, though, in the case of the Chrysler
Corporation? The Chrysler, there would have been.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's something they should do all the time.
Okay. John didn't mean to steal any thunder. Go ahead.
No,
that's all right. I think that we could make... There must be some way of making them work. I mean, let's face it, if we went to war tomorrow, they could make all sorts of things. Why can't they make them to make work? I don't mean make war things. I mean, why can't they build homes and... There must be some way they can help the unemployed, as well as ignoring them and trying to put them down.
Well, I think I appreciate your comments, and I think the fundamental point is that the unemployed have to help themselves, and help themselves as an integral part of the labor movement.
Yes, but now, the young people coming out of school do not really know how to get around and help themselves. Like, I mean, this is who needs help. Why can't there be programs to help them?
Sure.
Like, we have a long winter here in Canada. Why can't they have exercise programs and that for them? The way when the summer comes, they can compete with anyone and working on farms or anywhere else.
Yeah.
Like, we spend a winter where we're hibernating here. And then we ask our young people to go out in May or June and start working hard.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. That's about all I have to say.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Clark.
Thanks very much.
Appreciate the call, Patricia. 433-3121 is our number. If you're outside the London area, please call us collect. Let's go back to talk with Jackie Ewan now from the Unemployment Help Center. Jackie, you went up before one of the council committees, I believe it was, last week sometime,
mm-hmm.
with a proposal that I'd like to get some reaction to this morning as well. And you wanted some subsidy or assistance, I guess, for unemployed people as far as their LTC fare was concerned.
I have to put that in the proper context.
Okay.
We, for the last almost 3 years, we have been helping people on a one-to-one basis and have gained a lot of results, including $1 million, over $1 million back in wrongly withheld benefits. We've also helped 20,000 people. But what we saw was the same problem reoccurring again and again. People who really wanted to work, people who had their heart in the right place, they were trying to get a job, but basically they couldn't afford to get around to look.
What was your proposal, Jackie?
The proposal I made will result, well, I'll do the outline of it. People who are on welfare and looking for work will be provided with a 50% reduction in buying a bus pass.
Sure.
That would be a half-price bus pass. The city would subsidize the other half. The province would subsidize the city 50% of its expenditures on this. And what would result is that the person who really wanted to use the bus would have to make quite a quick commitment of about $15 a month,
mm-hmm.
which is a lot on a low budget.
Sure, and that's 50% of the monthly pass then, right?
It is.
Okay, how much money would it cost, do you think, the taxpayers of the city?
It would save the taxpayers. Now, what I did, I had professional business consultants do a lot of the research for this.
Mm-hmm.
What it would mean is, assuming that 15% of the people in the program got a job 1 month earlier than they normally would have,
mm-hmm.
it will save the city a gross amount of $600,000 per year.
Mm-hmm.
It will make the LTC $500,000 per year. And so there's something in it for everybody.
Okay, where does it stand now as far as the council's concerned?
Well, the council is looking at my proposal, and if they're trying to verify the facts and the documentation in it, they'll be pleasantly surprised to know that it's all completely verifiable, and it is a very valid proposal, and it's my belief that they will jump at the chance.
When do you think you'll know what the decision is?
Well, we want to implement this program in on January 1st of 1986.
Yeah, but when do you think they'll let you know whether they...
I hope in short order. I've got some meetings scheduled between the LTC, myself, and the Social Services Division that they're going to notify me when those are. And I think it's just a matter of ironing out the different problems that may arise.
Okay, good luck to you on that proposal, Jackie. And let me thank you very much for...
Before I go, Wayne, may I just say, our organization does have the endorsement of Labor Council, and there's been some confusion over that, but we continue to have their endorsement.
Thank you, Jackie Ewan, from the Unemployment Help Center. Appreciate the proposal, and good luck to you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
It's 20 minutes before 10 on the hotline. When we come back, we have a gentleman who is a delegate, was a delegate to the Labor Council meeting last Wednesday night, and he was there, and we'll talk to him, and we'll continue with John Clark from the Union of Unemployed Workers.
Top 2-1.
If you're looking for new carpet, then this is for you. Latella's Ethan Allen Gallery's 10th annual factory authorized sale featuring Burlington Carpets of Antron by DuPont.
You can jump on, stomp on, dance on and on. Carpets of Antron by DuPont.
On beautiful Burlington Carpets of Antron to live on and on, even with the hard use of the most active family. And you can bet on Burlington having just the right color for that special room. Best of all, you can save on Burlington Carpets right now during Latella's Ethan Allen Gallery's 10th annual Burlington Factory Authorized Sale. Save on beautiful Burlington carpets right now at Latella's Ethan Allen Gallery, Highway 22 and Wonderland Road North, London.
Fall clothing has arrived at Accessories. Come in and feel the excitement of new fashions as only Accessories can present them. See what Alfred Sung, Linda Lundstrom, Adrienne Vittadini, Nancy Heller, and many others have created. Accessories-friendly staff will also help you coordinate your wardrobe with selections from their fabulous accessories. Shopping early ensures you the best selection, and you can use their own layaway plan. Feel the excitement at Accessories, 481 Richmond Street, beside the Grand Theater.
The Harvest of Value sale will save you money at TSE. Lower your heating bills with monococking at only $3.33 a tube, and furnace filters for only 99 cents. TSE has clear-out savings on gardening supplies, like fertilizer, garden tractors, tillers, and lawnmowers. Stock up on Valvoline 10W30 motor oil at only $16.50 for a case of 12. For fall fix-up around the house, farm, or car, you'll save during TSE's Harvest of Value sale. Shop TSE in London at 1742 Dundas at 3rd or in Strathroy on Caradoc Street North.
Western Mustang football is back on Radio 98. This is Gary Allen Price. Join Nigel Wilson and me as we bring you the exciting play-by-play action of the Mustangs during the 85 season. The Stangs came within one play of an Ontario title last year, and this year they are out to make that play. Be a part of the action all season long, exclusively here on Radio 98.
Let's go back to the hotline phones now. John Clark is my guest. Radio 98. Dave, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
I'm fine.
Good. You were at that meeting last night, or at least last Wednesday?
Yes, I was.
Okay. What was your opinion?
What I saw there was, in my opinion, one of the most shameful examples of backroom maneuvering and general gutter politics that I've seen in a long time. This recommendation which the Labor Council executive put before the delegates had apparently been decided way back in August.
Now, what was the recommendation for the sake of people who may not have heard about this or who weren't at the meeting?
A recommendation to withdraw support from the LUUW, and in their words, grant the LUUW autonomy,
mm-hmm.
as if the LUUW didn't have it in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
But what really infuriated me and a number of other people that were there as well is, as I say, this decision had been made a long time ago by the executive at any rate, but only...
How do you know that?
Well, I've spoken with people afterwards, and you can ask the executive yourself. You can ask Mr. Perry if you want, but it was made at the August...
What is this hearsay that you're giving us now? Or
that's correct. If you don't believe me, you can check it out with the executive. Anyway, the point is, it was obvious at any rate, because there were a number of people there, a number of delegates who aren't normally there. There were people who were... various people were informed ahead of time that this recommendation was coming and that they should make sure to be at the meeting and so on and so forth. Other delegates, known to be sympathetic to the LUUW, like myself, weren't given this information, nor, interestingly enough, was any of the issues, whatever they might be, that supposedly precipitated this action, ever discussed with the LUUW. You can confirm that with Mr. Clark. I asked him myself.
Okay, so what you're suggesting then, there was no notice?
No, and you see, the thing that's striking about it is that one of the big issues that was brought up there is how there was supposedly the LUUW was lax in consulting with the Labor Council leadership on what they were going to do and informing them ahead of time and so on and so forth.
Okay,
here you have the Labor Council executive pulling straightforward behind the scenes stab in the back maneuver.
Let me bring John Clark into this. Did you, when you went to the meeting on Wednesday night, John, did you know that this was going to be recommended? Did you know in advance?
Oh, I had absolutely no idea that it was going to happen.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting. I sincerely hope that a member of the executive is going to phone in here. If they don't, we're going to have to answer their allegations without them having the opportunity to speak back. So I would urge them to get on the phone right now.
Well, we tried to, as you know, and we were declined.
That's an interesting point. Mr. Perry declined. It was also remarkable in the meeting that the executive declined to speak for itself to even justify its recommendations until forced to. It's standard practice that when the executive brings forth a recommendation, they read out what their motion is, and then they explain the reasons why. In this particular case, there was a curious silence from the front of the room, and the person who got up to supposedly explain and justify this recommendation was your Mr. Pellerin, who hasn't even been a member of that executive for the last 2 years.
I should say, too...
Obvious, in other words...
I should say as well that... Hang on just a second, Dave. That we did ask Ron to be with us, and he agreed to be with us this morning, but he did indeed have to be out of town for 2 or 3 days. Let me thank you, Dave, for your call this morning.
Yeah, well, I think the other thing that should be clarified is what is the real issue there, and I think it was brought out in the Labor Council meeting. One of the executive members read out something from the LUUW that criticized, without naming any names, quite correctly and diplomatically. It pointed out that there are some individuals in leading positions in the trade union movement who are not serious about organizing the unemployed and who merely devote themselves to going cap in hand to Queen's Park and so on.
Dave,
this apparently really annoyed them, although I don't know why it should, since it's common knowledge amongst both the unemployed and serious trade unionists.
Dave, we're going to have to leave it. Dave, hang on. We're going to have to leave it there, okay? All right, thank you for your call. 433-3121. Another line becomes available. Let's talk to somebody else here if we can. Radio 98, Sue, you're on the air with John Clark.
Hi. I was at the picnic for the truckers, too, and I want to agree with someone who phoned in earlier. Mr. Clark certainly can motivate a crowd, but when I was listening to it, it sounded really good, and then when I thought about it, he said several times, calling unemployed people on a garbage heap, and I really take offense at that. I've been unemployed now for quite some time, and it's hard enough without someone telling me I'm on a garbage heap.
Well, I think that I should clarify. I wasn't trying to infer that you or anybody else is garbage because they're unemployed. I was simply pointing out that in the eyes of the people who are responsible for unemployment, that's precisely what the unemployed are, garbage. And I think that we reject that. What we're endeavouring to do in Organise the Unemployed is precisely to organise people to fight back, to have self-respect. As I said, I think I quoted the words of an Onto Ottawa trekker who stated that if you find yourself unemployed in today's situation and thrown on the garbage heap, there's nothing to be ashamed of because it's not your fault. But if you don't organise and do something about that and fight back, that's when you should be very ashamed. And I think that's the point I was putting across. Certainly not to insult the unemployed. Very, very far from that.
Well, that's the impression that I got from the speech.
Okay, but now you've had it clarified. Do you see the point now or not?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Would you say that this union speaks for you as an unemployed person based on what you know about it?
I would have to say no. I don't think they do. How can you speak for something that's constantly changing? The funny thing about unemployed people is they become employed again, and it's a group that is hard to organize, I would think.
Yes, it's a group that's very hard to organize. That's precisely why we say that the unemployed movement is part of the labor movement, because people are going back into their jobs, people are losing their jobs. It's a very fluid group of people.
Uh-huh.
But while people are unemployed, we say that they need a particular organization to fight for their interests and to defend their rights.
Sue, let me thank you very much for taking part this morning.
Okay.
433-3121. If you're outside the London area, please call us collect.
Then quick. First of all, is there any fees to join your union?
Yes, we charge 25 cents a month membership dues.
25 cents a month. Second question is, what do you get paid as president of this union?
The amount of money, the maximum amount of money I have ever taken home is $600 a month.
$600 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what is it that you're trying to point out here? Because I think there's something in the back of your mind, John.
Well, I would think that with the job possibly that he had, I believe it was at Westinghouse,
mm-hmm.
that $600 a month to me as a person that has to live, I have a family and a job and all this stuff. Well, I have my own company. $600 a month for what he's doing to me just doesn't come across 100%. That's awful tough living unless he's got a lot of other money stored up somewhere.
No, I haven't.
Okay. So you're kind of doing this to be the nice guy on the block then?
Well, I'm doing it because I believe it to be fundamentally important, but you think you're right in observing I'm not in it for the money.
Right. Okay, that answered that question. The other questions I have, or there's a couple here. I just took a quick ad in the paper. There's 178 various jobs in the paper right this morning in the London Free Press. And I can't see why we would need a union or why anybody would want to be on UIC with 178 different jobs. If a gentleman has to babysit to make money, well, that's a job.
The fact of the matter is, I think that as an organization, we're fighting for decent jobs for everybody. And I don't think, it's very rare today to hear somebody with the opinion that there are jobs out there if you want to work and unemployment really isn't a problem. I think it's beyond dispute that there hasn't been in the last few years some epidemic of laziness that has led to unemployment rates shooting up. I think there are real fundamental problems why there is unemployment, and I don't wish to insult you, but I think it's a little bit nearsighted to fail to see that.
I see.
What about these 178, though, John? I mean, if that's accurate, and I have no reason to believe it isn't.
Well, as he points out, that includes babysitters. That includes jobs that would pay not enough to support a family. Even with those 178 jobs, it's a flea bite in terms of...
$600 a month. I couldn't live on $600 a month.
No, it's as I say, I'm not in it for the money, and it's. But the point is that even if all those 178 jobs were decent jobs, which they're certainly not, it would be a flea bite in terms of unemployment problems in London.
It's a start, though, isn't it?
And I'm sure there'll be people clamoring for those jobs. I mean, I could tell you stories that would make your hair curl in terms of the kind of exploitive jobs that people are being forced into in these days.
Right. I understand that as an employer and own my own business, I see more people coming in asking them, having me to sign their cards for them because I'm not hiring anybody.
mm-hmm.
than asking for an application to work.
John, I'm going to have to leave it there. I thank you so much for your call this morning.
You deserve a hearing. Get one this morning on the Wayne McLean Hotline. Call 433.
Bet to win. Radio 98. Listen to the difference.
Radio 98, Bob, you're on the air with John Clark.
Good morning, gentlemen. Mr. Clark, after listening to everything this morning, I think I've really got one question for you. And in your own words, I'd like to hear you explain, since I think the issue here today is job creation, how is the job created? Where do jobs come from, in your opinion?
Where do jobs come from?
Yeah, like do jobs just exist, or are they just something that's there, or is there a process involved in the creation of a job?
Well, what happens is that people own capital, and they set productive units in motion, and they hire people to perform work for them.
Now, that's interesting to hear you admit that. You're saying, therefore, that capital is the thing necessary to create jobs, and yet you have already denounced private enterprise, free trade, and capitalism as being evils, and that the profit motive does not serve the unemployed well. How do you account for this contradiction?
Well, the capital in the sense of factories and plants and equipment and what have you are of course integral to any system, but if I was describing capital as it exists at the moment, I was obviously describing the present system. I'm not saying that there isn't a better system, but you asked me how things are done, and I told you.
Well, certainly I'd be interested in your describing the better system.
Well, I mean, yes, I think that we could indeed say that. That a better system would be one in which working people owned and controlled the means of production, and in which production took place not for the profit of private individuals, but for what was socially beneficial as a whole.
So what you prefer is profit for the worker rather than profit for the people who put it all together. How do you account for that contradiction? Isn't everyone entitled to earn money?
I would say that under the present system, profit is made, of course, not out of entrepreneurial skills, as they like to tell you at the Dale Carnegie courses. It really takes place out of the labor of working people, as it is done from time immemorial under one system or another.
Well, what you seem to be telling me is that management and people who organize and people who collect capital and put it together, they're not working. This is what you seem to be saying.
Yeah, I think that's about the size of it.
If I work for a company and they pay me X number of dollars a week, okay,
mm-hmm.
I can, if I want to, go down to some stockbroker and buy a piece of the action. Like you're suggesting that the means of production, et cetera, should be owned by the people who do the work, right?
I think that in that instance you'd probably be operating on a rather smaller scale than Conrad Black. I think you'd find the situation loaded against you. The rags to riches story is the gruesome exception.
But it is a possibility, though.
It has happened. There are those who stole their grandmother's gold teeth and never looked back. But they are the exception.
But there are companies that do allow equity participation on the part of their staff or their employees.
Yes, they do, and for the most part, I would regard that as a shabby fraud.
Why is that?
I think that you have a situation where workers produce profits.
Mm-hmm.
They take back a portion of their labour in the form of wages. Whether you give that the glossy name of profit sharing and introduce quality circles and other collaborationist measures to try and sugar the pill, it comes down to the same thing. You're producing profit for the employer by working as a worker.
Mm-hmm. Okay, this sounds very familiar to me.
Mr. Clark, you're saying, therefore, that if the workers own the factory, how are they going to get paid if they're not to make profit?
Well, I mean, this is all fascinating stuff, but I mean, really and truly, I came here today to talk about the attack that was made on us at the London and District Labour Council. I mean, you call in, perhaps I could ask you where you stand on that. Do you think that the Labour Council was correct in booting us out? What do you think about that issue?
Well, I think it's irrelevant to me, because I think the issue is job creation. Your infighting between your various left-wing groups
uh-huh.
is really of concern to me, and I think that you are quite... let us say, morally evasive at the very least, to not identify yourself as a communist, which I believe you are. You didn't deny it, after all. And if someone called me a communist, I would deny it vehemently, mm-hmm. and I will here state in front of you that I'm a capitalist, and I believe in the capitalist system as being the only system that can create the jobs that you seem to want so much. Listen to what you've said this morning already. You admitted already that the minimum wage causes unemployment, and then you went and advocated a higher minimum wage. If the minimum wage works so well, why not go for $100 an hour? Why not?
The reason for not going for $100 an hour is because we're not going to get it. The point is that we fight for what we can realistically win. Now,
You can get $7 an hour. What happens to everyone whose labor is worth less than $7 an hour? You don't seem to care about them being unemployed.
I think that all the capitalists who find themselves out of work because of the lack of value for their the parasitic existence they live at the moment, they'll have my full support and sympathy. And we'll put them to productive labor.
Good. I mean, these people need jobs. People need jobs no matter what their political stripe. There is a reality here that you don't want to deal with. I mean, okay, look at the other things you're looking at.
Just one second. This is really public
works. Where does the money come for that,
Mr. Clark? This is getting really, truly absurd.
That's because I'm addressing the premise of what you think, and you don't like to have that addressed, do you?
What is the absurdity in your view, John?
The absurdity is this, that I came on this program today to talk about the split with the London and District Labour Council, not to be a party to a party political broadcast for the Freedom Party.
Well, I thank you for that plug, but it's not necessary. I've been doing this a long time before I've been active with the Freedom Party. You're evading my questions, Mr. Clark.
I'm not interested in answering your questions. There are no consequence to me. I mean, I come on here to talk about something that happened within the Labour movement, and you come on here and want to talk to me about the glories of free enterprise and laissez-faire capitalism and other political irrelevance. It means nothing to me.
You haven't then... Tell me, how is a job going to be created? I want to hear your process. You haven't created a job yet, not either in theory or in practice. I want to hear your explanation of how a job can be created under the system that you propose. I can't see it.
Perhaps you're not listening to me. Allow me to say it again. I regard you and your organization and your mentor to be a guru of political irrelevance. It means nothing to me. It's of no interest to me. I don't want to debate with you. I don't want to discuss with you. You offend me. You revolt me. Please go away.
Well, Mr. Clark, surely
okay, Bob,
you realize
Bob,
you...
Bob, hang on. Hang on. I'm going to give you the last word here, and then we'll move on.
Well, I've got to say that Mr. Clark's evasion is very indicative of what he stands for, and I hope people are listening to this morning. Because Mr. Clark does not believe in the freedom of people to work for whom they will. He comes off with all these Marxist platitudes that people are swallowing left, right, and center. Every single policy the man advocates creates unemployment, and it's a statistical fact. I mean, there's just not an exception to the rule, and the man doesn't want to deal with it, and it's quite evident by his manners this morning.
Thank you for your call. We'll move on. 433-3121, Radio 98. Bob, you're on the air.
That's interesting in asking Ron why he's calling them the LUUW a commie group. To me, that's really evading the issue. The unemployment, the LUUW has been working to help unemployed people in the city.
Mm-hmm.
There is no kind of political line that you guys are ever promoting in, and it seems that just... by calling you a commie group has just evaded the whole issue that the LUUW is working with. Why do you think he's calling you a commie group?
I think because it is the archetype red herring. I think that it detracts from, it tries to hide the real issue here, which, as I've stated, is that the present leadership of the Labour Council does not want to deal with an autonomous unemployed workers' organisation. And again, I say it's extremely interesting that they use Pellerin as their hatchet man. They use him for two reasons. One, of course, because he's infinitely more articulate and capable than any of the present leadership of the Labour Council, but also because he can't be questioned on specific allegations that he makes. For example, he makes the allegation that the London Union of Unemployed Workers never submitted a financial statement to the Labour Council or to 15.
Don, I can't broadcast it because you're making a charge here, and we all could get in a lot of trouble, okay?
You know, the thing that always just intrigues me is that any time in society, you know, since McCarthyism and before that, it seems like anybody who ever questions authority gets labeled as a commie, and in this case, the authority happens to be the Labor Council. I've been involved with other groups in the city, and at a certain point when we were doing really effective work that some people maybe was threatening their credibility,
mm-hmm.
they would end up red baiting, and it's just such a... It's such a really sad, it's just like swearing. Why don't you say exactly what you mean? Red baiting just is, as you say, it's just a red herring. It's useless.
Let me thank you for your call this morning. Appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
433-3121. Maybe they don't want the tactics that your group employs involved with them. Maybe your personality in this whole equation is something that is of concern. Have you ever thought about those things?
I'm very glad you raised that, Wayne. I think it's a very fundamental point. Pellerin and others stated at the meeting that they were embarrassed by the London Union of Unemployed Workers.
Hmm?
I would ask, why are they embarrassed and who are they embarrassed in front of? I mean, quite clearly, I would imagine that if you're interested in getting along well with Al Gleeson, if you're interested in getting along well with Gould Hume and the Chamber of Commerce, then you would find the actions of the London Union of Unemployed Workers somewhat embarrassing. If you're interested in fighting for changes in London's brutal welfare policies, which we've been very, very successful in doing, if you're interested in joining a venture to organise unemployed workers, to put people on the roads for a provincial march for jobs, as we're seeking to do in November, to fight, to be militant, to live up to the spirits and traditions of the trade union movement, then I would suggest that you have nothing to be embarrassed of in the actions of the London Union of Unemployed Workers. You have a great deal to be proud of.
But is there a middle ground? Can there be compromise between some of the things that you're doing and suggesting and the things that are occurring with the actions of organized labor here in the city of London? Does it have to be this way, John?
When I see people come into our office angry, desperate, tricked and cheated out of their benefits for the most shabby reasons, when I see the suffering that goes on amongst unemployed workers in this city, in this very city, the so-called center of white-collar affluence, when I see these things, I become more and more convinced that there is no middle ground, there is no compromise. And I think the leadership of the London Labour Council should recognise that and face up to the realities.
We'll be back with more in a moment.
Win a Masonville day. The grand prize winner will be given $500 spending money an hour for 5 hours. Enjoy the luxury of a chauffeur-driven limousine to take you to and from Masonville Place. Pick up your entry forms for the shopping spree of your dreams at all participating Masonville Place stores. Draw to be held Saturday, September 28th.
Hey, London, you like our style.
This is a public notice from Wickham's. The entire Hitachi Western Fair display will be sold at great savings this Wednesday from 6 till 10 p.m. at Wickham's Warehouse. Portables, consoles, large and small screen color televisions, video cameras and recorders, stereos, stereo components and more, all at incredible savings for 4 hours only, Wednesday from 6 till 10. The Hitachi Fair display sale at Wickham's Warehouse, Highway 135 between No. 2 and White Oak Road.
Everyone agrees Duffler is the place to go with sewing problems or special fabric needs, but some people think those extra touches make Duffler a little more expensive. How else can they maintain so huge a selection or hire such helpful staff? Well, the only way to convince you you'll save at Duffler is to invite you to compare. Compare prices, compare quality, compare service and advice. Do that and you'll convince yourself. Duffler saves you money every day. Start comparing Duffler and start saving on sewing.
In London, 228 Dundas near Clarence.
Radio 98, Ron, you're on the air with John Clark.
Okay, good morning, Wayne, and good morning, John.
Go right ahead, please.
My name is Ron Collis, and I'm registered totally blind, and I would like to talk to you about the fact, just to get your opinion on employment for handicapped people, and I'm unemployed due to circumstances because the CNIB has a set salary of piece rate instead of minimum wage.
Okay, now, we don't have much time here, Ron. What is your specific question for John?
How would a person go about finding better employment and seeking better work situations?
Okay, this is a handicapped person.
Sure. Well, I think that the situation for handicapped people is disgusting and very, very hard. I don't have a specific response. I would suggest that you contact one of the disabled organisations, and certainly if you called our office at 673-3402, we would be very, very happy to discuss the matter in more detail with you and to come back with a proper and fitting response to your question.
What is that
question.
Again? 673-3402. Okay, got it. All right, Ron, I thank you very much for your call this morning. I hope you'll do that.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate the time. John, we've come to the end of another program. I thank you very much for being here. I look forward to what's going to happen in the future as far as your march is concerned, November 3 to the 12th.
That's right.
And I'm sure we'll have you back again as a guest.
I look forward to it.
Thank you very much, John Clark. That's it for today. We're back tomorrow on the Hotline. Next week, astrologer Robin Armstrong, Phil Edmonston.